So, when we sit down to write our September edition of the Ampersand, it's always a bit of a challenge because we take a summer hiatus and then we don't want to come back after 2 months off and hit people over the head with a really heavy kind of political rant or what have you, which we generally try to avoid anyway. But this was really things were moving so quickly during the pandemic that we were sort of out front of the whole notion of the Great Resignation. It was in November of 2021 when the well-known stat that nearly 5 million Americans quit their job in that month alone, and we were sort of foretelling of the pendulum swing actually snapping back to the candidate side of the market as early as September, and we could actually see that coming even during the summer when we had our pens down from writing the newsletter. So this the September 1st, 2021 ampersand we called Supply and Demands, with the S on demand, just as a bit of a play on words as to what employers could expect. Hope you enjoy it. Supply and Demands, the Ampersand 2021. Dear friends and colleagues, after our self-imposed 3 month hiatus, we are back at the keyboard and pleased to pen our 153rd edition of the Ampersand. We hope you had a great summer. When last we wrote, our focus was on reviewing the year that had been, a look back at the lessons learned and opportunities seized during the preceding year of crisis. In this edition, we look forward. Forward to what we believe will be an unprecedented spike in hiring and lateral movement, to the three-headed challenge that awaits employers as they balance the surge in business activity with sharpening employee expectations around working from home, and the simple yet complicated issue of vaccinations in the workplace. For all three of these matters are interconnected and highly combustible. Let's first discuss the impending hiring frenzy. The supply side of the market, the candidate, and the demand side of the market, the client, are on a collision course, each deciding at about the same time for similar but different reasons that it's time to make their move. Typically, there is either a downturn in hiring spurred by layoffs or tepid growth plans resulting in an oversupply of candidates, or there is strong demand from the client side resulting in an oversupply of roles. For reasons which will become clear, we now face a scenario in which the few people you presently have on the payroll are feeling emboldened to flee, with no shortage of suitors whispering in their ear. It's not candidate demand that's the issue. It's the candidate demands that will prove problematic for employers moving forward. As we emerge from COVID, assuming we are, in fact, emerging from COVID, and confidence returns, companies hesitant to either hire or fire during a period of uncertainty will feel now's the time. Having already cut deeply, during the prolonged energy crisis in Alberta, most organizations were running lean when COVID hit. And as the pandemic rolled along, begrudging tolerance of an underperformer doing a necessary job in an average manner was more appealing than cutting deeper still and then trying to figure out how to recruit and onboard an upgrade virtually. Similarly, on the employee side, tolerating a 4 out of 10 job, working for a horrible boss surrounded by uninspired colleagues was deemed worth it based on the simple calculus that receiving a paycheck during a terrifyingly uncertain global pandemic was preferred to not receiving one, let alone facing the specter of being the new person starting a new job, trying to figure out how to integrate and meet colleagues remotely. No longer. According to PwC's latest US Pulse survey of 1,007 employees and 752 executives in the US conducted August 2nd to 6th, The Great Resignation is currently underway, with 65% of employees saying they are looking for a new job, and 88% of executives saying their company is experiencing higher turnover than normal. And so, fueled by the triple shot of pent-up demand for change on both sides of the ledger, the confidence of a mostly vaccinated local populace desirous of something new, and the not inconsequential catalyst of steadily rising commodity prices, and you've got yourself a hot market. So hot, in fact, that a recent report by Alberta Central projects that the provincial economy will grow by 7.5% this year, tops in the country. All of which leads to my second point, working from home and its very direct impact on the broader hiring marketplace. Allow me to illustrate with this redacted email exchange from June 1st with the CEO of a large public company in Calgary. Adam, we instituted 5 flex days per annum in the heydays of 2012, 13, 14, but I took them away at the beginning of the pandemic. The team wants them back, but I am thinking that perk left Calgary by now. Any ideas? Thanks. Hi. This is a tricky one. It is much harder to take something away that's been given than never to have given it in the first place. We are finding that the post-COVID return to work is already creating retention challenges for companies. People like working from home, and if they can do it effectively and productively, they will resent being asked to come back to work. While you are correct that certain perks from the 12, 13, 14 glory days have left Calgary, new ones are rolling in to replace them. And frankly, the flex day perk never really left. My advice would be to give them back. It's a relatively easy give. Don't fool yourself. It won't earn you any extra brownie points among the team. It will simply prevent you from being in the doghouse. What you view as a birdie, they'll see as a par. Though not specifically about working from home, the exchange is a proxy for a broader conversation around employee expectations. The pendulum from an employer's market to an employee's isn't so much swinging back as it is snapping violently. Mandating a return to the office without a compelling justification for doing so will only provide the accelerant required to hasten an already agitated employee's departure. Mandating vaccines? That's a whole other thing we'll get to in a minute. In our own firm's experience, working from home did not diminish productivity. In fact, productivity soared, as did employee engagement and the overall job satisfaction. And we weren't alone. According to this article, Canadians were particularly productive. What suffered was culture. Try as you might to host online wine, trivia games, and virtual cooking classes, most humans require human interaction to feel truly part of something. High-functioning teams simply can't perform to their fullest in isolation. The question we have been asked and are being and asking ourselves is how to retain, let alone enhance, the culture of your organization whilst giving your people the ability to work from home, something most prefer to the traditional office grind and associated inconveniences, traffic, expensive lattes, pants. This isn't casual Fridays or paid parking. It's a more existential shift to what people truly value. The individual working happily from home will naturally place that comfort ahead of other collective considerations. Culture is created when the sum of the parts is greater than the whole. And if the parts aren't working together, even if they're working well, it gets very tricky. Make no mistake, in these parts at least, working from home is no longer, for now, a necessary imperative born of an urgent need to keep each other safe and homeschool our kids. It is little more than another recruitment and retention tool. Those organizations that doggedly insist on a return to the past will lose people. This may not have been concerning when times were quiet, the leverage residing firmly with the employer. Where are they going to go anyway? But in a booming market, your people have options, and after 18 months at home, they have savings and lengthy bucket lists too. And they'll vote with their feet. You'd be shocked to learn how easily they are triggered to leave for reasons unrelated to more traditional grievances. Consider this quote from Executives Unlimited in their August 2021 report. Quote, the reality for many businesses is they will be adopting a hybrid working model. Whether the reason for adopting a hybrid model is driven by operating cost savings or accommodating the needs and requests of employees, the playing field will no longer be level. While many employers have been using this time to reconfigure physical office space, the bigger issues will revolve around how organizations evaluate and recalibrate corporate culture in a hybrid workforce to ensure equity and productivity. Close quote. Which leads to the final wrinkle we'll sprinkle into this witch's brew, vaccinations. Somewhere along the way, choosing to stay alive became political. I don't recall citing my personal freedoms as justification to reject a measles shot or the poke that protected me and my family against yellow fever before heading to Costa Rica. Yet, here we are, tiptoeing around elephants in rooms related to vaccination status. We recently drafted a fairly benign office policy that basically said, we're in the people business and it would be preferred to keep those people healthy and safe, so please get vaccinated. Running it past our outside legal counsel, you would have thought we were trying to build a pipeline. And I quote, first, it is an open question whether inquiring as to vaccination status is appropriate under human rights legislation and privacy legislation. Generally speaking, requiring disclosure of vaccination status may be appropriate, but only where other less intrusive means of preventing infection are inadequate for the workplace. The determination will focus on the character of the workplace and the types of risks it gives rise to. Whether an office is an appropriate environment for a disclosure of vaccination status is, again, an open question at this point. Anecdotally, we know of several employers who are proceeding with similar vaccination status disclosure policies with the potential risk of noncompliance with privacy and human rights legislation in mind. Close quote. We live in strange times when we are being asked to consider a remote legal risk ahead of an imminent health risk. Still, with an already diminished candidate pool in a frothy market, employers face the unhappy choice of mandating vaccinations and alienating, at best, or losing, at worst, another faction of your workforce, or accommodating the unvaccinated, thereby creating a resentful and two-tiered employee class, at best, or endangering colleagues, customers, and community, at worst. For me, this isn't a COVID test, it's an IQ test, but I realize the peril of that sort of stubborn thinking, born as it is from my quirky desire to keep those around me, you know, alive. Our advice? Pick your battles carefully. Choose the hills upon which you are prepared to die. While it was once exceptional to host a meeting virtually instead of in person, it will now be commonplace. Not a hill to die upon. While it was once exceptional for an employee to say, I think I'll work from home today, it will now be commonplace, not a hill to die upon. And while it was once exceptional to not want to take the steps necessary to protect yourself and your neighbors, it has now become, rather incredibly, commonplace to question even that. Very much a hill to die upon. Like, actually. Regards. Adam.